Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
An Inferno match at this time of year on this episode of SmackDown with no hype or build in your kitchen.
Come on to the Rock Show. Come on to the People's Show. Come on to the premier show, SmackDown.
It's the 8th of June in the year of our Lord 2000. The release of Sonic's It Feels So Good is number one in the charts. The Eurotrance single charted in 98 and it went so well they thought, sod it, let's do it again. Gladiator is still number one for the fourth week in a row, getting the Triple H push in 2003, not letting any other film get to its level. The big game this week is Space Channel 5, aka Parappa the Rapper in Space. Notable for having Michael Jackson collaborating with Sega again, but sadly, he doesn't dance to any of the Sonic 3 music that he didn't compose. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Yes, he did.
But the big news this week in the world of outside wrestling is on the 6th of June, Channel 5 airs the one-off game show Naked Jungle.
Oh, God! Is this your highlight of the news?
Yes, it is.
Oh, my God! Keith Chegwin with his little checkers out.
That's right, both of them. Naked Jungle was shown as part of Naturism Week and attracted 2 million viewers, a record for Channel 5, with 20% of the audience share in its time slot. The show featured presenter Keith Chegwin and contestants completing a number of puzzle-type tasks in a jungle environment. The program sparked a debate about nudity on television and was mentioned in the House of Commons, where Culture Secretary Chris Smith questioned the quality of British television content. Oh, Channel 5 in the 90s. In August 06, a Radio Times poll called it the worst British TV programme ever. In 07 interview, Digital Spy Chegwin said of Naked Jungle, "It's the worst career move I made in my entire life. If I could turn the clock back, I would." He said that due to the programme's time slot of 11 p.m. on a Tuesday, he believed it would not have gained as much publicity as it did.
Here's the
and part
thing
of me
today.
Wishes that this was the week that we had the American Matt McMuscles on, so we could attempt in vain to explain this to an American more suited to Shadow the Hedgehog. So that was everything going on in that week. But, Matthew, yes, what of wrestling? What of anything but naked Keith Chegwin? Were there any war crimes being committed across the world, Matthew? I mean, why not? You've whet our appetite enough. Yes, fret not. In the wonderful, wacky world of wrestling, a little-known program known as SmackDown was still on UPN and still pumping out quality entertainment that can only be enjoyed by myself, Mafu, and the man-master himself, Mr. Tom Campbell. Together we are the Cultaholic Classic SmackDown Review. Tom, how the hell are you?
We aren't allowed to pass any statements or judgments on what America does at the polls today because we as a country decided to put Keith Chegwin's pecker on television. We aren't allowed to choose. We aren't allowed to say what's a good or bad decision anymore. And I love Cheggers. I did some radio with Cheggers years ago.
Oh wow.
We did he was doing something for morning television up the road from us and we invited him into the radio studio and there is a recording of myself and Amy Stubbs, the newsreader at Signal 107 at the time, playing Cheggers Plays Pop with Keith Chegwin. It was quite a moment in my little life that I'll always treasure. But he didn't have his pecker out, which I think helped, because it would have been it would have been a very, very different day. but otherwise, all is good.
I love that you left that at the very end of the story, Tom, because it was what we were all thinking. It was like an Alfred Hitchcock film.
He ran in with his pecker out. But all is good here. All is good here. I want to take another opportunity before we get into the rigors of the year 2000 to say thank you to everybody for the wonderful comments following Wrestling with Mental Health. It was a video that we dropped on the YouTube channel last night. And Ross told his story, his way. I've never been more proud to call him my friend. And if you haven't watched it, maybe you're struggling at the moment with everything going on planet Earth. It's a really heavy, heavy year, this one. And if you can find any solace from hearing some truths about mental health from Ross, then I'd highly recommend that you watch it. It's an incredible story that Ross tells. I've never known him as open. And it was, like I said, I'm very, very proud to call him my friend. So if you haven't watched it yet, I encourage you to do so. And if you have, thank you for the kind words.
Yes, I watched it last night, and I'll say this, people get shocked and offended when I say things like this, but I don't watch everything Tom does.
What?
I would have no time to do anything else, because he is the hardest working man in all of wrestling media. And it's... Okay, I try to use my words very carefully here. As I typed to Ross last night, it's really easy to talk crap and say insulting things about things. It can be very hard sometimes for me to say things genuinely and affectionately and with so to get my point across. So bear with me. It was lovely to see that a man like Ross, who summed up his upbringing very well, he is from that part of the Northeast where depression and feeling bad are rich people problems. They're not for us, that type of thing. And it's nice to see that he is in such a position now where he can share how he's feeling and he can help normalize the fact that, yes, no matter your upbringing, your area, or what you do for a living, you can go through these things. And because I think a lot of the time, a lot of these feelings and stuff is brought by the fact that you're not allowed to talk about it. So the fact that he did that video and the fact that it was handled wonderfully by yourself, Tom, I mean, it was a jaw-breaking moment when you basically asked, so what was it that stopped you? And that hung in the air like a bad smell, like bloody hell. I mean, we're really going into this, aren't we? Mm. So thank you, and I've already thanked Ross in the DMs for making that. It's nice that we are all real people on these channels. We're mostly playing exaggerated versions of ourselves, obviously, but when we take the mask off and show ourselves and warts and all, it can be quite... It can take your breath away. It's almost like if you did a sit-down interview with Daffy Duck, you know, that type of situation where he's telling about his problems, about all the issues he has with Bugs Bunny. You go so attached to these people that something like that getting said by somebody from a jolly man who yells about how bad Raw is this week, it gets to you, you know?
Yeah. I think it's easy to forget that a lot of the people that you see in videos on YouTube, more often than not, they're personas. They're reflected for entertainment purposes, and they're real people underneath. Ross is a real human underneath, and we saw that and we heard that from Ross this week. And I think that's the important part. It's from Ross. It was an idea that I suggested to Ross, as I said, it'd be great to talk to you about mental health and where you've been. No worries if it's not something you don't want. If it's something you don't want to do, that's fine. But it was Ross who was like, yes, definitely want to do it. And let's book it in and do it. So Ross's choice to do it. It was all Ross's words. I steered it. Ross delivered it. It was amazing. And I'm so proud of the messages that I must have got a fraction of some of the messages that Ross has got. But the messages that I've got from people saying about the dark places they've been in and how they felt this year and how tough it's been this year and just how much comfort they got from the video of people going, people who they probably, there's at least one message I had from somebody who said, I just assumed that you guys all had the dream job and everything was great. I was a little bit envious of stuff that you do, but to see you as real people makes me feel closer to you. And that was, that hit actually, that one hit. But it was, there's loads. I can't reply to them. It's the first time I've ever put out a video where I say I genuinely can't reply to them all. But thank you very much. I'm more so on behalf of Ross. It's Ross's story that was told. I was just there just guiding it. But it's Ross's story that was told. So thank you for reaching out. But enough of that, because we've got to go back in time now. We've got to go back, Math, to simpler times, the year 2000, when if you're feeling sad, you're down a pint of Castrol GTX. And you
and run a mile.
You put milk in your car and run a mile. And you play Wet Tricks for a bit before ringing up the Games Master hotline to find out how to get past the final boss.
That's right. And then you go home at Channel 5 at 7 p.m. and get ready for Keith Chegan wearing nothing but a smile and a pair of lugs. But never mind that, Tom. What's happening in the world of wrestling?
So before Matthew guides us through this week's episode of SmackDown on UPN, I like to give you a little bit of a walk around the wrestling world this week. So let me take you by the hand and lead you through the streets of Humdrum. So this is what's happening in the wrestling world this week. The Rock's going Hollywood, Math. It's happening. It's starting to happen. Daily Variety reported that Dwayne Johnson is in negotiations to star in two major films that will make him $5 million each. Dwayne The Rock Johnson looking to work on an untitled big-budget sci-fi film with Joe Roth. And he's also in negotiations to star in a prequel to The Mummy 2 called The Scorpion King. Dave Meltzer says a successful career in the movies would mean, as far as his wrestling future is uncertain. Johnson, who has just signed a renegotiated contract with WWFE, will, in the same ballpark, be doing either movie that he would in a full year of being the biggest star in pro wrestling. So basically, he could either wrestle for a year or make two films. He'll make about the same amount of money. There's no question, says War Dave, that consistent losses of Johnson from the active WWF tour for significant periods of time will impact business, even though, as a movie star, it could and probably would up his marketability within the wrestling world. So you'd have to lose The Rock in order to gain some shine from The Rock on a less consistent level. This is a nervous time for WWF underneath, because this is where The Rock is the hottest he will ever be. Like, this is the peak of The Rock's popularity, and you've got Vince making this money off of The Rock and selling out arenas off the back of The Rock, big ratings numbers because of The Rock, and now Hollywood is calling, and it looks as if Hollywood is going to entice The Rock away. You can totally get why Vince McMahon has reservations about making Rock-esque stars in 2020, can't you?
Yeah, but at the same time, this was what was happening at late 99. No Undertaker, no Austin, Foley getting ready to hang up the boots and all that. So they've known about this. So what we have right now is a stacked full card, not necessarily full of headliners, but we have Rikishi, Too Cool, Jericho, even Earl freaking Hebner as attractions on the show. So as over as The Rock is, and he is absolutely, staggeringly, wet-pantingly over. I was going so well until the third one, the rule of three. That you're right. They're either going to have to use The Rock to get someone else over, which doesn't seem likely, given that he steamrolls over everybody. It's like an 18-wheeler going against a fly whenever he gets in the ring. Or they're going to have to be smarter. However, they have just have The Undertaker come back, so that should help things. And, you know, Kane is the number one contender, so hopefully there's some stuff to go around there. But regarding Dave Meltzer's opinion about The Rock becoming a Hollywood star, it'll never last. What does he know?
There have been two wrestling-themed meetings of high importance this week. One of them was Paul Heyman meeting with the ECW talent. Now, Paul Heyman hadn't been at an ECW show for a couple of weeks at this point. He flew to Pensacola, Florida for a meeting with the ECW team. He, in a lengthy meeting, he talked about where he thinks the wrestling business is going. He believes, and this is what he told the ECW locker room, and you know, you take everything that Paul Heyman says with a pinch of salt, just to sprinkle on the bullshit, a bit like Salt Bae. Heyman said he has a theory that WWF and the USA Network would settle their lawsuit, which is currently pending, because WWF approached a different network about working with them without consulting their current network. So there's a big lawsuit in the air right now. Theory has it that WWF and USA will settle their lawsuit before going to trial. He believes that Raw will go to TNN, and he believes that ECW will get picked up by the USA Network or Fox. This is what he tells the ECW locker room. Shortly after this, Jerome Young and Balls Mahoney pipe up, New Jack and Balls Mahoney pipe up, and ask them where their money is, because pay-per-view bonuses haven't been paid out. ECW hasn't paid any in a long time. Heyman says the money is on its way. He also says, and this is a fascinating meeting, because Paul Heyman's always been quite a clever guy, but as we've seen, especially in 2020 and stories about him, if you owned a bullshit detector near Paul Heyman, you'd have to replace the batteries hourly. Like Heyman also says here in this meeting, he believes WCW could go out of business by the end of the year.
Oh, Christ.
Which would make ECW the number two company in the world. Now, he's not massively far off that particular estimation, but it certainly doesn't make ECW number two. A few more notes from this big meeting from Paul Heyman. He says that Heyman says the reason the budget has been cut back on TV tapings is because TNN broke promises to ECW and he doesn't want to spend any money to make the product look good on TNN. So he's like, so this is a proper silly buggers routine from Paul Heyman, where he is saying, oh, TNN, they're advertising other places and not us. Well, we're not going to make our product look good. What are you going to do about that? And TNN are going to go, we're just not going to advertise you and we're going to take you off. Well, in that case, we'll do even less production and it'll look even worse. What do you think of that? We'll probably just cancel you. He also says there's no money trouble within ECW, but there blatantly is. So that was one of the meetings that happened this week. The other meeting, you'll like this one, Math.
Before we get to that, wait a minute, don't we?
Yeah, come on then.
There's a lot to discuss there.
There's a lot to unpack it there, actually.
There absolutely is. Cornette did Ask Jim Cornette mailbag thingies. He was asked about Paul Heyman, and because obviously he was brought up because of the AJ Styles situation happened on WWE in 2020. And Cornette said, it's weird, Heyman is shocked or offended at the fact that he has this reputation as being a BS artist, which is amazing considering he's getting up to stuff like this. I mean, it's staggering. The Heyman TNN thing is one of the strangest ordeals I've ever read about or seen, because Heyman always had to have, I think it's one of the ways he was able to be masterful and trick all the roster into believing his lies, there always had to be an adversary. It was either WCW was the problem, or TNN was the problem, or the arena was the... There was always somebody, there was always an enemy. He's an amazing propaganda artist. So, and I love him saying, it's all right, once WCW dies, we'll be number two, and then New Jack and Balls are like, okay, cool, can we get paid?
Yeah, can we have some money then? It was so brilliant.
I mean, it's fascinating. One day there'll be a deeper dive, or we'll get somebody to be on the Conrad Thompson shows, like the head of TNN at the time, programming, going, what happened here? Like, why... Heyman went to war with the brand that was broadcasting him and his show, and then they didn't.
We hate this stinking network.
Yeah. Heyman, wouldn't it be a nicer idea to get along with the network? And so they get a... No! Oh, okay, sorry. Could we get paid? Actually, I did think you were going to say there was a big meeting with the roster. Heyman lined them all up and then told them all individually, I'll call you right back, and then left. Anyway, Tom, sorry, what was the other meeting?
The other meeting taking place is at the headquarters of MCI Communications, now MCI WorldCom. It is a shareholders meeting taking place in Missouri. with the shareholders at MCI and the Parents Television Council.
Oh, here we go. This plot line.
Oh, this is a deep one. So the PTC met with the guys from MCI to demand the company pull its advertising out of SmackDown. The PTC has pressured MCI to pull out of the show for months, but the company's response has been it denies that it bears any responsibility for the content of the programs that it sponsors. Now, chairman of the PTC, Steve Allen, spoke about four children who had killed other children by mimicking pro wrestling moves. Allen gave MCI 1 week to pull out of the show or threatened them with a nationwide educational campaign to inform Americans that MCI WorldCom shares the same offensive values as the WWF. And when we are talking about some of the companies this is going to affect, the PTC claims more than 35 companies are working with WWF and, quote, share the same values. We're talking Wendy's, Ford, General Motors, Coca-Cola, AT&T, M&M, Clorox, State Farm Insurance, Office Depot, Walgreens, Saks, Delta, Southwest Airlines, Allstate Insurance, Procter & Gamble, Hershey's, McDonald's, SBC, Maytag, Colgate, Palmolive, Kellogg's, Pfizer, Domino's, Federated Department Stores, Best Foods, Wrigley's, Bank of America, and Johnson & Johnson, as well as the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and the Coast Guard. They want them all out of WWF, basically.
But they're right with lugs.
Oh, lugs are fine. No mention of lugs. No mention of Go Midas. No mention of the tobacco, anti-tobacco kit company, Tobacco's yeah. Wacko of your teen.
Or the heart exploding medicine.
none of that is mentioned, but this is the beginning of something special. L. Brent Bozell mentioned in this one. He spearheaded the original sponsorship boycott of SmackDown since he lashed out at the Procter & Gamble lot because they were dropping sponsorship of Dr. Laura's TV show in the fall because of what they perceived to be anti-gay comments on her radio show. So we're getting into the weeds now with the Parents Television Council. This is quite the journey we go on with the PTC, isn't it, Matt?
It certainly is. I wasn't aware until you'd said all that they were that heavy-handed with some of the advertisers because I was on the perspective of the PTC were saying, look, you know, have you seen the content on the show? Yes. There's women getting put through tables. Yes. There was a no-holds-barred match with blood and thumbtacks and barbed wire on Johnny. Yes. An old woman's saggy tits were shown. No, that was Naked Jungle. No, it was the Fabulous Moolah. I remember them. I remember both of them very vividly. Oh, okay, I apologise for that. Okay, so you're agreeing with that. Yes, that's right. And you're still saying that it's all right to have stuff aimed at kids. Oh, yeah, fine. Absolutely fine. And I can 100% agree. Now I'm a bit older and, you know, look after some kids. I'm like when I was a kid, I loved it. But if I was an adult, would I let my kids watch it? Absolutely not. No. That'll probably only make them want to watch it even further, so you can't win. So I could agree with them there. Them going up to advertisers and going, look, those dead kids are on your hands if you don't take your stuff. And if not, we'll campaign against you for not doing it. I'm like, oh, wow. So when Bruce Pritchard and other people talk in horrible defensive ways against the PTC, I thought they were just talking about the first thing about, no, 5-year-old should watch this, it's fine. But now that they were doing that with advertisers, that's, I'm not sure I agree with that so much. What do you think, Tom?
You may be listening outside of America and you may say, oh, what's the big deal? Just let them go. The PTC had a massive draw with people. They had the ears of the nation. Think of it as like Mary Whitehouse with a military budget. Like Mary Whitehouse back in the day, if she had had like the sort of the tools and the powers and the accessories that the PCC had to be able to go to some of the programs that she rallied against and said, unless you clean it up, I'm gonna shut you down in the form of newsletters and strongly worded letters. There was a legit threat there from PTC because they would have gone on a crusade about these companies. And I guess we'll just have to wait and see how this pans out, won't we?
Oh, like The Rock's Hollywood career will be over in a month, Tom. There might be no lasting effects on the product.
Also, in the wrestling world, there is preliminary work and funding being done to start the Fight Channel in the US, a 24-hour digital satellite television service showing martial arts, boxing, and wrestling.
Oh.
There you go.
I don't remember what happened there.
Well, no, it was... Well, this is the embarrassing... Obviously, we would get the wrestling channel many years later from this, but the idea of, like, an all-fight wrestler channel that showed independent wrestling, presumably, was certainly being mooted. And I love this, and I want to mention this because I wasn't even aware this was a thing. This particular week, a musical is opening off-Broadway called Blitzkrieg, right? It's a comedy about a kid who believes he is on a mission from God to straighten out pro wrestling, but doesn't realize that wrestling is fake. How have we never heard of this?
That name doesn't really fit the description you just gave, Tom. I'm not lying.
If you know the play, once you watch the musical, it makes sense because the main character is called Mickey Blitzman. So Blitzkrieg became the character name.
Did Stan Lee write this? He was bitten by a radioactive German pilot from 1943.
Yeah, it was. I didn't say it did very well. Mind you, it came back for a very brief run in New York at the Cutting Room in New York in 2005. But yeah, so this was hitting the world this week. That brings all your wrestling stuff this week.
Yeah, that is a little thing to investigate. I hope we have more information on that next week.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of information on something, before we dip into SmackDown, I would like to apologize to all the people who tweeted, "Enjoy your dinner, Mafu," like they did last week. And I responded with this generous act of kindness by doing absolutely nothing. That is some shocking rudeness.
How rude.
Just because I couldn't think of anything to do. And sometimes I'm like, well, what can I do that's special rather than a like? Because I like most people who say, Matthew, you looked very sexy this week. Like, and then it's a bit different between that and Matthew, I listened to all of your god-awful, stupid, bloody podcast with Tom. So to tell you what, to make up for it, at the end of this episode, we'll do another little a stinger, whatever they call it in the business, to get you to tweet at me or Tom. I promise to tweet a picture of Test to the people who decide to tweet something at me to make up for me just going, what? Enjoy your dinner. Who the hell are you? Oh, SmackDown. Right. Okay. So again, apologies, but hopefully if you listen to this, I mean, I hope people listened to this last week who did this. They haven't all gone, well, sod you then. If you don't respond to me on Twitter, I'm not listening to your bloody podcast. So hey, we'll see, won't we, Tom? And the only way
we'll
to see
show them
is by diving headfirst into Buffalo, New York's finest SmackDown-related programming. Michael Cole says, last week we had 3 number one contenders, but now we have none. There's no dramatic recap, so all we can say is witty-wee, witty-woo.
It's a shame we had no dramatic recap because by the sounds of it, it was quite an exciting episode of Raw because Meltzer made a few notes that weren't captured, which was at the show, Bob Backlund, this is on Raw, Bob Backlund was running around in the stands. Hard to figure out why, since Rochester is a part of Connecticut's first district where he was running for election. A woman flashed the crowd.
He was literally running.
He was literally running. A woman flashed the crowd during the commercial break before the Edge and Christian in an angle match, which distracted the crowd during the early part of the match. After the live show ended, they didn't do anything after the live show to send the fans home happy, with Rock doing a speech, as would be expected.
Oh, so they usually send the Rock out to do a promo? Oh.
Yeah.
They have to do reshoots.
Yeah, normally they do they just do some pickups and then the Rock will go, candy ass smell, see you later.
Oh, I know why, Tom. Because when the woman got her norks out, someone backstage said, well, we'll have to cut that out. And Rock heard that and went, all right, we're done for the day then.
Triple H heard, we'll have to cut that one out. And he went, all right, I'll buy Noah.
That sci-fi film project you're doing, Rock? It's that doesn't look good. I've heard it's already doomed.
Your eyes are dilated. Are you high? If you've discovered this podcast for the first time, maybe you stumbled across it via the Wrestling with Mental Health video, or maybe you spent a lot of your weekend watching Adam Pacitti in Hell in a Smell 3 and went, oh, what else do Cultaholic do? By the way, big love to Adam. We haven't given Adam any love. Unfortunately, just talking about being sad took over. But big love.
I worry so much about him. You should have done Mental Health with Adam Pacitti as he was covered in hospital.
Oh, Christ. That was the time to do the interview. But big love to Adam Pacitti doing 24 hours in Hell in a Smell 3. The video, literally, this will go down in history as the 24-hour live stream that YouTube tried to ban in progress. Twice the stream went down because YouTube pulled it.
I say this every week, Tom, but PTC did nothing wrong.
I just had a message from Adam Pacitti saying that he's had a good long sleep and he doesn't smell anymore. So that's exciting news. Well done to Adam. Anyway, so So we were making jokes, weren't we, about Doom and The Rock's movie career. Let's crack on with SmackDown, shall we?
Yeah, you're right. We don't want to get distracted. Not on this show.
We don't like getting distracted 30 minutes in. And we've all we've said about this week's SmackDown is witty woo, witty woo.
You're right, Tom.
Half an hour into this bollocks.
But before we get to the first match, I Hate Steven Singer has this brand new piece.
They are so, like, the Conrad adverts are brilliant. Hey, well, look, we're getting distracted. We're getting distracted even further.
You're right. We open up with Chris Jericho versus Test. Oh, good. We're not going to get distracted now. In a King of the Ring qualifier match, Chris Jericho sadly has his horrible face shirt back on. It's not a good look when the blokeys outside the arena selling the T-shirts on the floor after the show are selling better designs at half the price. Jericho says Test ain't winning, but it's okay. He doesn't need King of the Ring because he's currently the Jerkle of the Squared Circle. All right, Jericho, we'll do the Test jokes around here, mate. Fast action to start off with Jericho landing a springboard dropkick to send Test off the apron, but managing to run right into a Test big boot, the same big boot Creative gave him when he asked if he could win the title at Survivor Series 1999. The Phil Nelson bomb gets a close two, but no one reacts. Ha ha, Test, you ain't winning, I've typed here.
We knew that before SmackDown started.
Yeah, as soon as the match was announced, I'm like, all right, cool. Jericho does his best to sell for Test, but no one is buying him. Rather like Space Channel 5 this week. Sorry, Sega. Trish hits him as he tries the lion salt, but Jericho kicks out and gets a roll-up. But Trish is distracting the referee. Crowd kind of buying it now. Test tries his pump handle thing, but Jericho shoves him into her and pins Test after a lion salt. Ding, ding, ding. Wow. Test and Trish. The blind leading the blonde.
Who's blind and who's blonde?
Yes. I think this match happened later on in the taping and they shoved it first to get it out of the way. What did you think, Tom?
Test has, let's think, in the last 12 months, right, Test has been emasculated on multiple occasions by Triple H. He had his wedding crashed and his wife stolen from him and he barely did anything about it. But you call him a jerk and he will bomb to the ring to beat you up.
Sponge.
Jeff, he called me a jerk.
No, Test, he called you a jerkle.
He called me a jerk. I've also put here, Trish gives the best a big boot. I think referring to a boot to his face. But that was mean because Test did do a mighty good big boot.
He did. He did.
I feel it's appropriate at this point. I feel like it's appropriate at this point since we're talking about Test, who is a popular in-joke on the Cultaholic Classic SmackDown review. Bring up some news from another favourite in-joke on the Cultaholic Classic SmackDown review, and that was the British Bulldog.
Okay.
From Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer.
Oh, no.
After his problems recently, Davey Boy Smith has been taken off the active roster and sent home for treatment in Calgary. Smith is taking care of his children and has gone through a myriad of problems, some self-created and others, such as the loss of his family members, not the case. He's got numerous personal issues as well as tax issues pressing. He is still being kept on the payroll. So Davey's not in a good way. Old tight jeans bulldog's not in the great way.
Oh, I didn't know about the tax issues.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
Somebody's not been doing their paperwork. I'm not going to pay my tax, whether I want to or not.
So how are your tax reforms looking?
I'm effed.
HMRC, I'm effed.
Bulldog has an amazing career. A lot of people this side of the pond have a very soft spot for him. There's no denying he should not have been in the ring at this point. He can barely bump. He's the same colour as uncooked hot dogs. And his own action figure has more mobility than him right now. When Brucey P has been asked about this situation on Podcast with Conrad, he does say that they said, look, you need to go to rehab. And Bulldog just went, I'm fine. I'm all right, mate. And so they had no choice at that point. I don't know where the truth lies, but yeah, he was hired, if I'm remembering correctly, he was hired as to curry favour with the Hearts, I believe, after post-Owen. I think I'm getting that right. It's been a while since I've checked this. So rather than looking at this run and going, good God, we should look at it and going, look, the fact that he went there, got some money when no one else was going to touch him, that's some positive to be said.
That's true. That's true.
I'm trying my best.
You did.
You
very...
put on your serious voice, Tom. I'm like, something serious about Bulldog in 2000.
No. It's it's fine. He's like I said. He's home. He's resting. He's not getting a title shot anytime soon. Might get some tax relief. Where's my tax relief? You call that tax relief?
You had your tax relief.
You had your tax relief. You call that tax relief? The Rock dropping a people's elbow on me is not tax relief.
Throws a bin through the HMRC windows.
Oh, that's funny. Oh, gosh, that's funny. Anyway, sorry. Sorry, put a bulldog-sized speed bump in there, but away we go.
We go backstage to The Rock walking. And you know he's walking because Michael Cole yells, hey, it's The Rock. Chaz, or Mosh, says hello, and The Rock blanks him, as some dude playing a co-worker looks unconcerned. Oh, this must mean he means serious. I mean, if The Rock's not going to say hello to Chaz or Mosh, I mean, you know he's really on fire.
You know he's in a foul mood if he's not talking to the headbangers.
No, one half the headbangers and the headbangers' mate, Jimmy. Anyway, the King of Rock what? The King of Rock who? Brings out DX and some special black and green balloons. Triple H explains when something good happens, he just wants to share it with everybody. But don't misunderstand, he still despises every single one of you people in the crowd. He's not having a celebration with you. He's having it in front of you. Oh. Crowd boo. He's such a dick.
Such a
Triple
bad
H
guy.
Says Kane and Undertaker aren't contenders anymore. And also, Triple H pinned Rock 1-2-3 on Raw. So there are no number one contenders right now, according to him. Triple H thanks everyone in the ring for helping him and for being such a good friend. From Road Dogg to X-Pac to Patterson to Hardcore Champion Briscoe. And then he gets to Steph, and the slut chants are deafening. It's like complete silence and some slight boos when he's at Briscoe and Patterson. I guess because the Buffalo, New York crowd remember the wars they had in the 80s. But as soon as they get to Steph, it's Slut City, not Sunderland. Triple H wants a big hug with everybody in the ring, and as they're doing the big old Triple H hug, if you smell, la 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 la, that's right, The Rock is here. And The Rock wants a hug. No, sorry. The Rock doesn't care about the party or even the title. He just wants to kick Triple H's ass. He says, tonight, it doesn't matter if it's no DQ, handicap, or Triple H Stephanie shove 50 balloons up your ass match. Which is an interesting line. And I swear at this point, Rock has an ass fetish. There is definitely an epiphany for the ass or shoving things up it. Crowd reacts, so it must be something in the air. Triple H thinks Rock has a lot of anger inside him. Which I think is a nice little line. And he says, he thinks the Rock's misguided. Look at this footage. And they show clips of Undertaker costing The Rock the title at Judgment Day 2000 when he interfered on everybody right in front of Shawn Michaels, the special guest referee, when he says, no, Undertaker, don't do that. And he did it anyway. And then on Raw, The Rock accidentally hits The Undertaker with a chair, so Undertaker chokes him on Raw so Triple H could pin him. This brings out Undertaker and his very awkwardly edited theme to interrupt, and The Undertaker teases taking out The Rock, but changes his mind and takes out all of DX instead because he's The Undertaker. They eventually mob him, and after a think, The Rock jumps in and helps him clean house, like how The Mummy Returns is going to clean up at the Oscars next year. But then Undertaker accidentally hits The Rock with a chair as he was aiming for X-Pac, and then he chases him off with the Underbiker. But attention there, and after the break, The Rock goes to Undertaker's locker room, but instead bumps into Kane, who's been watching on his little TV. Kane doesn't say anything, and they stare off until Kane tries his promo voice. And Rock explains he doesn't like that as much as Silent Kane, so they brawl until the useless referees show up. A lot of stuff going on here. Tom, what did you think of all this?
Gosh, the DX bit goes on a bit. I mean, now, they've started... I feel like this is the first week they've started properly referring to them as the McMahon-Helmsley faction. I feel like they drill that in quite a lot this week, more than they normally do, unless I've not been paying attention. I feel like they drill in the faction line quite a bit, so that's an interesting little tidbit from me. Also, these segments at the start with Triple H and diatribes and booking the rest of the night, they are very rarely as good as the people involved think they are, you know? And you get the odd bit of gold from Triple H in these big, long promo-y bits at the start, but more often than not, they're just long-winded exposition. Like, say what you want for the state of Monday Night Raw these days, but the majority of times, they'll put like some graphics up and go, tonight, this match, and this match, and this match. Whereas back in the day, you'd have had a 20-minute promo to get you to one of the matches. So there is that. This went on a bit. And then you got Rock and Kane having like a pub fight backstage. It's weird, the humanizing of Kane at this point. It still feels very odd. You may be wondering where Paul Bearer is, Matthew.
I was.
The plan is, according to Dave Meltzer, for Paul Bearer to come back, but nowhere near The Undertaker and Kane. At time of writing, there is possibly the chance that Paul Bearer will return as an old-time manager role as Percy Pringle, or a name with a similar Percy Pringle-type persona attached to it.
Willie Walkers.
Stephen McCoy's.
Actually, sorry, Willie Walker sounds like bloody Chegwin, so carry on.
Billy Brannigan's. Do you remember Brannigan's crisps?
No, but you said so well, I'm going to pretend to.
You don't remember Brannigan's? Oh, they were like beefy crisps that came in paper packaging. I'm going to show you a packet of Brannigan's crisps to see whether it stirs anything. Oh, I'm looking at it now. They don't make them anymore. They're discontinued, and my heart bleeds every day.
All right, I'll see you, Brannigan's, and I raise you one Timmy Tudor.
Nice, kind of Tudor crisps.
Bag of Tudor.
They're a very northeast crisp, aren't they? Maybe Brannigan's and Tudor were just different geographically.
The Tudor crisps, by the way, it's very fascinating to see because the adverts and stuff were filmed like in Biker.
Oh, the Tudor crisps?
Going up and down Shields Road, you're like, bloody hell. I used to live there.
Oh, that's class. I like it when they film stuff around here. Like I was watching old Pac promos from AEW the other day. And just Pac there going, oh, Kenny Omega, you silly bastard. I'm going to come and get you. I don't know why he's Welsh. I'm going to come and get you, Kenny Omega, you silly bastard. I'm doing all that shite.
From the valleys,
Oh, I tell you what, Kenny, you're half tidy, Kenny.
My accent goes up and down like me, like a bit how like you will go up and down when I bounce you.
I'm gonna bounce you, Kenny.
I'll tell you that. Bally kiss Angel, and you can kiss your title goodbye.
Yeah, I tell you
what. I don't know what that even was. Sorry, that was just a pissed up Hartley Pudley number.
I'm going to Gavin yours, Daisy. but anyway, the point I'm making is, I liked...
Are you going to retain your title? Catherine Zeta knows. Oh, that's probably the worst thing I've ever said on this podcast.
Kenny Omega, well, you're scared of facing Puck. It's not unusual.
I'm gonna, when I get in the ring with you, Kenny Omega, I'm gonna knock you out the ring and in the row. Why, Delilah? Then I'm gonna have a bottle of bootlegger. Tell you what, Kenny Omega, right?
I love the accent started off so well. So well. And now it's just offensive.
The point I'm making is when Pac's there going, "Hey, Kenny, gonna have you, lad. you're a bastard." I like it when he's filming on, like, the quayside in Newcastle. Oh. So you can see the River Tyne and the bridge, the Tyne Bridge behind him. And like, and there's one shot where he's outside that jeweller's on the corner near Stack in Newcastle. I'm like, oh, I know there. I've stood there. I've been attacked by a charity mugger there. There's Pac there going, I'm outside this jeweller's. I'm going to wear you like a watch, Kenny Omega. He doesn't say that. But I wish he did.
You've gone from maybe Geordie to maybe Welsh. It sounded like Zag from Zig and Zag.
Do you all love me? Do you all love me?
Please welcome my special guest, Jenny Powell.
This is the Pagzagamuffin.
Turn on your landing light. Turn it on. Turn on your landing light. My God, we're niche this week. Oh, Jesus. We're niche this week.
So, yeah, you were talking about Paul Bearer.
Paul Bearer's coming back as a manager.
Well, I wonder what happened there.
I think okay, so here's the thread, right? I found the thread that we pulled. Percy Pringle, you said Willie Walker, I said Billy Brannigan's, and I said, do you remember Brannigan's crisps? And you said, oh, do you remember Tudor Crisps? They filmed that in Shields Road. And I said, oh, it's nice for you to see somewhere you know. Like the Pack promos where he's like, I tell you what, Kenny Omega, when I come round yours, I'm going to put you in the bumhole.
After this, Kenny Omega, we're going to go back to the big breakfast with Johnny Vaughan.
Oh, no, tell you what, Kenny Omega, I'm going to take you up Northumberland Road.
You do it really good, Zach. Anyway, yes, I don't remember the Paul Bearer. How do you remember all that stuff we talked about, Tom? That was an hour and a half ago.
That was on Sunday. We started that 47 minutes into this stupid podcast. We've talked about two things that happened.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This leads to the WWF Tag Champions. Too cool. Don't worry, this will get us back on track. Something normal here, Tom. A good old-fashioned tag team title defense. Oh, they're taking on the team of the Godfather and light heavyweight champion Dean Malenko. What?
What an odd team.
Yeah. Bell rings while Dean still has his title on because the action is so fast and Dean is so small. Too cool, get distracted with dancing. They notice the Godfather firing up the hoe train and he takes one in the corner and then he acted like he didn't hit it. Okay. Then we get Dino versus Hottie one more time in its usual goodness. That's unappreciated by everybody at the time, but we can now look in 2020 and go, God, smoother than peanut butter, these two. Hottie reverses a reverse suplex into one of his own in a damn fine spot. It all breaks down with Shotty hitting the worm on Dino and Godfather knocked him down the ring. The hoes help Hottie to his feet, and as he's dealing with them, Sexay lands the hip-hop drop Alenko to retain. Damn it. Thomas says, if you can't trust a hoe, my dad was right.
You can't make a hoe
just
a
hot match. Just a hot match. None of the commentators sadly mentioned why the Godfather and Dino were together, which is the question that was on everybody's lips. I guess we'll have to tune into next week's SmackDown to find out, eh, Tom?
Exactly. I mean, I'm not against these two as a team. Like, there's worse odd couple tag teams. Like, it kind of predicts the Dean Malenko ladies man thing that they're going to do down the road. Not that far down the road, but certainly down the
road.
That's
what I was thinking. Is this, he gets a taste of how can I put this nice way? Of ho juice. Which will be dropping their sponsors next week thanks to pressure from the PTC. Anyway, backstage, the McMahon Helms, the family, decide, you know what? It'll be a really, really good idea to have Kane, Undertaker, and The Rock take on DX. Yeah, that's a great idea, isn't it? We're so smart. We get the zoom in on Triple H as he just looks annoyed and seethes. See, speaking of annoyed, here's the ever-happy Chris Benoit. And he's brought to you by Stacker 2. That's how he got his physique. Stacker 2 and nothing else. And his opponent in the IC title defense is Jeff Hardy. Jeff lands some high-flying moves to start off as Benoit is called the fightingest IC champion. And Lawler says, hey, what about Patterson? Oh, that was a nice line. Jeff Hardy misses a rare 450 splash off the top and absolutely eats poop on the way down. All Benoit needs to do is move, and Jeff will beat himself. Jeff gets annihilated for 5 minutes before a horrible sunset flip attempt gets him a one count. And Hardy delivers a tope con hello as he tries to take every single bump he can on the bingo card. Jeff manages to land the swanton, but Benoit gets his foot on the ropes and then lands the crossface out of nowhere for the submission victory. Just Jeff Hardy destroying his body for 10 minutes, and I actually felt bad watching Jeff take some of these bumps because you can tell he's full of life, he's getting a push, he's waited all his life for this moment, and he's absolutely destroying himself, which you'd obviously take from later on in life. Afterwards, Jeff shakes his hand, and Benoit returns the handshake. Crowd are very nice and respectful. But then Benoit twats him with the title and grins in his contract-obligated time where he shows emotion once per episode. What do you think, Tom?
Best match of the night. Best match of the night. I thought these two just had a humdinger. They really did. And we are entering this beautiful work rate era for WWF now. Lots of love for Benoit, like they talked about him on commentary being, and it's a line in the English language that I always have trouble with. The fightingest intercontinental champion. The fightingest. And I get the meaning, but the word just doesn't sit right in my face. Fightingest. The most fightingest champion. Because he's defending his belt everywhere. And that's what the Intercontinental title is all about. We talked about this, I think, the other week. how that championship should be the belt that's defended all the time. That's like the workhorse belt. It's the work rate belt. And that's the belt that is that, you know, you'll have the best matches with. And this was proof of it. I think, you know, obviously history will leave a story for Chris Benoit, one that I'm not going to defend or challenge, but Benoit as an Intercontinental Champion here was perfect. It's just a nasty, aggressive wrestler who would just outmaneuver everybody. And it's almost like he had a million different ways he'd put the crossface on in most of his matches. Different ways to do it. Akin to, like, I'd love to see in modern wrestling, I'd love to see, like, a Timothy Thatcher with the Intercontinental Championship. And a push akin to this one. I.e. every week wrestling, but out-wrestling every style. Like, that'd be great. But Benoit, I thought, was great here, and Jeff really shone here as well.
Glad to see that you enjoyed it.
I did. I had a lovely time.
Oh, good. We were all about having lovely times here.
Yes.
As I try to look for my notes and just talk about any old crap. Oh, here we go.
Do we need to fill some time with mine?
I don't know. I think we can. Like, fill time on this show. It's one of the things people say. Can you look? You guys talk about wrestling too much on this podcast.
I'll fill time. Don't worry. Let me tell you something, Kenny Omega.
Oh, no.
When I've come out of it's Danny O'Doherty now.
Yeah. Wait a minute.
Tell you what, Kenny Omega. When I come out of this branch of Greg's, I'm gonna have your guts for garters.
I love the pause there as Tom tried to think. Right, what is there in Bishop Auckland?
I was thinking,
apart from drug problems.
My head was walking up Northumberland Street.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to pop to that cafe that backs onto a tanning salon. Oh, if I don't get the two mixed up again. Because it's weird. Because the shade of pumpkin spice latte has only just come out of my skin. And I'm going to come for you, Kenny Omega.
Listen, I'm Tom Campbell from Cultaholic, and I don't know what accent I'm doing, but it's basically a ruffian's voice from an old Sherlock Holmes novel.
I ain't telling you nothing, Holmes. I ain't telling you nothing.
North, we don't tolerate that type of bit.
I ain't a grass. I ain't a grass, Holmes. I ain't telling you nothing.
Not even for a canny bag of Tudor, which is where I'm from.
Canny bag of Tudor. I lived inside a canny bag of Tudor.
Watch out, Holmes. He's from Northumberland. How can you tell? Oh, there we go.
Watch out, Holmes. He's from me.
You can tell by the three eyes on his head. Speaking of which, look at
from. Look out, Holmes. He's from Barnard Castle. How do you know? His eyesight is excellent. Topical gag.
This podcast was recorded in November of 2020. You know what? Something you can't get in November 2020 anymore.
Stacker outside, 2. Outside the house.
Damn it. Yes, thank you, Tom.
A shop.
Brannigan's.
A hug from a loved one.
Zig and Zag.
Christmas presents for family.
That's right, Tom. Stacker 2.
Stacker 2, that's the one.
And they present the heart murmur of the week. Wow, fantastic. My parents have asked that for Christmas. And it is Kurt Angle going through the table on Raw, thanks to the Dudleys. That was Stacker 2. Ooh, me liver. Speaking of which, Kurt, Edge and Christian, Team Eck, are here. Kurt is upset at what the Dudleys did to him on Raw. And he's not just upset, but hundreds of upset children. Even more upset now that they saw Kurt get thrown through the table, and also they are all still reading from Christian getting hit in the balls by a dwarf, referring to Joe C helping them lose the titles. This was dying for Cole to explain what that meant, but it's that hang in the air, like, oh yeah, by the way, some dwarf just hit Christian, like it's an everyday thing.
What's funny is that they over-explain so much on this show. Like Michael Cole will be there as the Rock and Kane are talking. He'll be going, hey, look, King. Rock and Kane are talking. Like, we know, we can see that. They're fighting now. We can see that. Hey, a joke about dwarves. Not going to give any context.
But that's where you should give context. No. Hey, look, the Rock's got a hand. Lava is hot.
Pac is from Wales. You know, all these obvious things.
Tell you what, kill you, man.
Oh, no.
We burn through memes on this podcast, don't we? I was thinking about this the other day.
We
burn
do.
Through memes. Like, you think about this. In October, we birthed and shot down That's Gotta Be Kane.
And oh, no, that's making a comeback. Don't worry, kids.
And I'm a Time Traveller.
Season 2, it's been renewed.
Oh, get in.
Go on, what else have we burned? Oh, never mind then. Christian says, speaking of losers, we're in Buffalo. And this is something that I think over the years I got immune to and don't care about. But in 2000, it's so effective. Ha ha, your state sucks. And the crowd really react for this because Buffalo, they lose at the Super Bowl. Boo. They lose at the Stanley Cup. Boo. With Lola adding, oh, I forgot about that one. OJ Simpson. Boo. Like, how dare you say OJ Simpson? And Christian says, it doesn't get much sadder than this. Good Lord. You know, you lose everything. OJ Simpson. Ed says, for those flash photography, here's the new pose. And these bits are great because you don't need to know exactly what's happening in the current history of the moment because to appreciate this. Kurt puts on a jersey. I imagine it's for Buffalo, the Buffalo Bills, whatever the call, I don't care. And Edge and Christian, Edge and Christian decide to perform the pose as the football goal pulls as Kurt misses the kick. And again, you don't need to know about what exactly happened because Cole and Lawler explain it, and you just know the crowd is just booing this with such fierceness and emotion, like, you're bastards. So, and they make it even better. They then cut to some dudes in the front row who play for the Buffalo whatevers, and then they don't even give them, like, a names or anything. They just go, oh, look, it's the forward left, the midfielders for the Buffalo Todgers. And then we move on to the wrestlers because they're more important, because that's the priority right now in wrestling. These guys probably had to beg to be on the show rather than the other way around because nothing is touching SmackDown 2000. Oh, God. Sorry, I was laughing too hard for that. Anyway, it's 3-on-2 with Too Cool taking on ECK. Why is that? Well, the commentators speculate that Stephanie put this match together because, you know, she may or may not have a thing for little old Kurt, as that storyline is slow brewing tremendously. It's definitely simmering as we go through these months. And it's a really quick, fast match. Ends with Kurt Angle accidentally taking a spear by Edge and then ending it with a 3D. And that's pretty much it. The before-match shenanigans took up way more time. And I enjoyed this for what it was. But Tom, what did you think of it?
It was what it was, wasn't it? I quite enjoyed it, actually. Decent little knockabout. Did the job. I'm enjoying Dudley's as a face team. Team Ek are just stunning. Edge, Christian, and Kurt Angle are just the best. They're just so good as a threesome. And it's almost like they're all being elevated by each other. If you see what I mean, like they're all being brought up. Obviously, Angle is kind of the leader in this whole thing, but he is being brought up. He's bringing the others up with him, which is ace to see. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Great. Sorry for the typing there, but the boss is going asking messages on Slack.
I know, I've got the Slack window open in front of me, and yeah. I saw you typing.
And it's funny seeing Tom's messages coming up, and I'm hearing typing and going, ooh. Stephanie?
I'm just putting an emoji on the thing that you wrote. Anyone wants to know what happened there, I just put a heart on the little comment that Matthew wrote on our inter-work messaging service.
Be great. Pachini's trying to like get the serious discussion out the way these orders done, and it's just like, Zag. Stephanie McMahon Helmsley gets a quick interview backstage with Jonathan Coachman about how great she is. And apparently there's a battle royal tonight, and it's an open challenge. And the winner of that gets a title shot against Stephanie next week. But how can anyone want to challenge her? She's so great. And she said, you know what? Let's go and check, shall we, Coachman? And she opens up the women's locker room. And would you believe it? There's a bunch of them half-dressed and wearing towels. And they're very annoyed that Coachman's there. And then Stephanie McMahon shoves them towards them, shuts the door and switches off the light and laughs. Oh, that wacky Steph.
That's it. Go in there and see all the women. And I thought, I remember looking at that thinking, okay, well, there's some of the women in the battle royal. I wonder who the others are. Yeah. Not knowing what was covered.
There's some of Chaz or Mosh's friends from earlier that were too busy. They're getting ready for the bit where The Rock walks by them and he doesn't say anything to them. Even further backstage, Undertaker confronts Kane and wonders why he's not done anything to help him, even though he's been watching TV tonight and seen that he's needed some help. Kane says, because he's been watching the brand new series of That's Gotta Be Kane. And said there's this episode, right, where Kane has his bright idea of selling tap water as Peckham Spring. But then Undertaker doesn't want to hear about this great plot device and just sort of meanders off, probably wondering why he doesn't have his own show.
Why can't I have my own show?
Yeah.
Little brother's having a little tiff there.
Yeah.
Undertaker. The thing is, Undertaker would be the sort of character on That's Gotta Be Kane. Every time he comes on, the crowd would cheer. Oh, it's my brother.
Oh, I have the exact amount of food needed for three people, as I've been budgeting.
Ding dong!
You've done it now! Oh no! My brother and former WWF World Heavyweight Champion, The Undertaker!
Who would have happened?
I have driven for an hour and I'm absolutely starving. He rolls his eyes back.
Unless I get some food in me soon, I will not rest in peace.
Okay, Undertaker. Let me go check. Oh, ye gods, my roast is ruined. Undertaker's going to bury me alive again. But what if? I went to Burger King. I went to Subway, sponsored by WWF SmackDown. And disguised the what do they call them, hoagies, as my own cooking. Gets his foot on up in the window. That's gotta be Kane. Kane. What are you doing? Oh, I'm practicing my big boot pose. Don't want to be messing up no big boot spots, right? Why is there steam coming out of your oven? That's not steam. That's the fire. Well, the parents were burned. The fire, the flame. Undertaker just leaves. Phew, that got rid of him. I hope you're ready for mouth-watering cane burgers. I thought you said... Tommy, I'm going to stop you. I'm going to have to do the whole
thing. No, I'm not going to stop you. You must continue. Right.
Let me ad-lib more of this glory.
Yes, please.
Pretty much the same voice. I thought, Kane, my brother, I thought you said you were saying... We were having underburgers. No.
Underburgers!
No. That's what I call... I forgot where I was. No, we're having Kane hoagies, all right? That's what I call them.
Where you care?
You call underburgers Kane hoagies? Yes. It's a Death Valley expression. Really? Well, I used to be from Death Valley, and I've never heard of it. Oh, it's more of a
North Death Valley
expression. By the tree. Oh, I see. I don't go by the tree anymore. You know. Jesus Christ. You know, my brother Kane, who sounds nothing like me. These
Kane hoagies taste a lot like the Subway burgers that sponsor this episode of WF SmackDown. And later on, King of the Ring, later on this month. Old Linda recipe. For Kane hoagies. Yes. Yes, and you call them Kane hoagies, despite the fact that they're obviously subs. Paul Bear is coming back as a man. Excuse me for one second. Wow, what a great evening. Yes, I should be going. I have a number one contenders match to... Good Lord, what is happening in there? Vroom, vroom, you've done it now, Kane. No, that's just an inferno match. An inferno match at this time of year on this episode of SmackDown with no hype or build in your kitchen. Yes, ack, ack. Am I wrestling? No. Well, Kane, you are a strange brother, but you do hoagie a good... so close.
Kane!
You do Kane a good hoagie. No, Paul, it's...
just an
inferno match.
Mate, we've peaked. I think we've...
That's gotta be Kane.
That's gotta be Kane. And Superintendent Undertaker.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah, I said it was Paul Bearer dying in the... Yeah, it should be Linda. I forgot there was a tire thing. Oh, we've ruined it. Season 2
Start
sucks
again.
Compared to season 1. I can see the reviews already on IMDb. Oh, well, we had a good run.
You got to start from the beginning now.
Oh, mate, that was amazing. That was fine work.
Well, Kane, I made it. Despite you burying me alive. Oh, Undertaker, my brother. Heck.
I like how when you do an impression of Kane, every so often he just goes...
It's how you can tell the difference between the two voices.
No, you can tell the difference because you throw in Undertaker-isms when you do... You go, oh, Kane, my brother. Or, you've done it now, steamed hams. Oh, mate, Oh, gosh, I feel... That's made my day. That's made my day.
Thank you.
Oh, mate.
I feel empty. I'm hungry now. For some delicious Subway. Have it your way. The way in Subway is lit in yellow. Stephanie's here, and yeah, she's been women's champion for a long time without defending it. Something pointed out by the commentators is blatantly against the rules of the titles that is ran by the person who happens to be her father. Just saying, oh, here's Tori as the guest referee, because it's a... battle royal with pinfalls and submissions, and they can go through the ropes because apparently if it's good enough for dwarfs, it's good enough for women. And the competitors are The Cat, Terry, Ivory, Jackie, and Lita. And the Tolkien-esque Cat and Terry feud continues with both ending up outside and wrestling despite wearing high heels and basically belts.
How small how massive does the wrestling ring look? With just 5 people in a battle royal.
5 women who haven't eaten in days, yeah. It's the SmackDown debut of Lita's thong look. And you think someone will tell her to pull her pants off, but this was the thing in the year of our Lord 2000. This was very common around
the
place.
Rage.
And this is what made WF look relatively worth it. Even more so than Stacker 2. And all results... what have we got here? Lita eliminating Jackie in a blatant edit. So it must have sucked, leaving Lita alone to beat Terry with a moonsault. And she wants the title shot tonight. I was wrong, it wasn't last week. Tonight. And Stephanie's been doing commentary. And Lita says she wants Stephanie right now. And Stephanie gets up and goes, well, I'd better do it. I'm a fighting champion. So the special guest referee attacks her from behind, lands the Tory Plex, which sadly no one else does anymore, and then starts the match. Stephanie walks over, pins her in 5 seconds, and that's it. Lita then does an interview saying that she's mad. And Lola responds, she's not mad. She's just a sore loser. Anyway, good little rub for Lita here, where she wins a match and gets some of the momentum, a term that gets used often in a parody sense, but was quite real here, from leaving SA Rios to join with the Hardys But Stephanie still gets her heat because she's Stephanie McMahon. What did you think, Tom?
Yeah, I liked it. It was just a way of getting Steph over as bad heel. Like a very Triple H way of doing it as well, with shenanigans and smoke and mirrors and all that stuff. It puts Lita over strong, which is good. Lita's promo afterwards, I thought, was very... Well, there's a way to go for Lita's mic work here. even if Kevin Kelly asked the right question, still wasn't quite... Yeah, lacked a bit in the interview, but... We know where we're going with this, and there is a nice payoff to this when we get there. So I'm all for it for now.
I love episodic content.
Incidentally, talking of episodic content, Kevin Kelly was in that bit. You'll hear him tomorrow on the Cultaholic podcast feed in a brand new episode of Desert Island Graps. Kevin Kelly and I, we talked about wrestling, his radio career, date nights, and... his three wrestling matches that he would watch while stranded on a desert island. Hear that tomorrow from Kevin Kelly from off of New Japan and formerly the WWF and this episode of WWF SmackDown. There we go, got that in.
That was a nice spot. Date night.
He talks about, like, now he's working from home. Like, he's having more date nights with his wife. It's very nice.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, there's some human stuff in there as well as the wrestlings.
Oh, so does it go from like, oh, that's really nice, and it's good to see you as a real person now, Kevin Kelly. Glad that you and your partner are having a nice time. So about the time that The Rock put a shirt over your face because you were too ugly for the promo and you just stood there with your hand out.
Did you have a lovely time?
Yeah, what are your memories of standing still? Anyway, don't let that distract you. It's Matt Hardy versus Eddie Guerrero in a King of the Ring qualifier match. It's good action. But there's only so much wrestling we can fit into these podcasts before we have to bring up a crap N64 game. It's a union thing, I'm sorry, blame Pacitti. So Eddie wins with a Frankensteiner off the top. Something, something, test. It's test. Steph, I'm stuck on tonic trouble. There you go. Nice. Any thoughts here, Tom?
Fine. Just it did what it needed to do.
Don't worry, the next segment will pick it up. Val Venus backstage is doing push-ups, and Trish Stratus is complaining about how often she's washed her face, but she can still smell the smell of Rikishi's ass. She gets annoyed that Val Venus is not paying attention to her. So then Val gets up and goes, hey, oh, me poor throat.
Now, is it Kane or Undertaker doing this?
No, you know it's not them because he says, my manager, Trish. If it was Undertaker, he'd say, my brother, Kane. And if it was Kane, he'd go, egg.
Okay, those are things we need to listen for.
Yes, all right, are you paying attention, boys and girls? The man of 1,000 voices. And he says, listen, Trish, we're only together as manager and wrestler. So the only thing you need to do is to hold your end of the bargain up. So one thing is, they're together. That's interesting. That must have been something that happened on Raw. And it's they're still sticking with non-pun serious Venus. And I'm like, oh, okay, I mean, they're fighting an uphill battle here when he's still got that name, that pervy voice, and also he still has... Hello, ladies, at the start of his theme, which is now a hard mix. Rather like Sonic, they're just going to re-release this in 2 years' time and hope it charts. And before he gets to this next thing, we get the Tabaki is Wacky. Bring the ass of the week. And it is Trish getting Rikishi'd on Raw, like she just said. It's nice when these adverts play into what's happening in the storylines that we're going through. It's a nice segue. So it's a serious, serious grudge match. And you know it is, and it's always a serious grudge match when it's a reformed porn star against a man with a huge ass. Rikishi wrecks him easily, so Trish interferes with a bag of cocaine, and it culminates with Val Venus busting Rikishi open with the ring steps, the DQ. The useless referees arrive to watch as Val Venus strikes Rikishi down with the ring bell repeatedly. They don't just stand there doing nothing and just go, oh no, the humanity. It's one way of repackaging Venus. And I thought that was the end of it, because it's okay, nice, letting their message across. then after the replays of what we've just seen, they're still going at it. There's nothing to stop Rikishi's. He's bleeding everywhere. The red's all over his beautiful yellow hair. And he takes Venus all the way to the Tron, stomps his face in the steel, which I thought was going to be the end of it. But then Rikishi leg drops Venus on the stage. And I thought, bloody hell, that was enough to end Undertaker's face in 95. So that's going to be the end of it, right? Oh, no. Well, Venus then gets shoved off the stage. I'm thinking, all right, well, that's going to be the end of this. And then Rikishi splashes him off the stage. What the hell? And they've done spots like this later on where they've used a mountain of mound and padding to make it look safe. There didn't appear to be a lot when Rikishi jumped down. I mean, there was a layer of something for sure, but I don't know, when Snitskin came, went off Raw ramp one time, and it was basically a bouncy castle at that point. This is just Rikishi doing a splash to the outside and some a little bit of padding. And I was amazed by this. I know Venus and Rikishi would feud, coming in that amazing cage match, but I did not remember this segment at all, Tom. Where were you for this blitzkrieg, not like that, of Venus versus Rikishi?
Oh, no, I remember this because I remember at the time just thinking, oh, Rikishi and Val Venus, I'll just sort of... I remember watching it first time thinking, oh, this match will just happen, then we'll move on to Rocks on later, Rocky. But yeah, I remember they just went OTT for this. And the jump off the stage was unreal. Like, Rikishi looks like he almost hangs in midair for a second as he's on the way down. I think it was where the camera shot it. I remember thinking that was impressive. Yeah, they just went for it here. You may notice the music was dubbed over in his intro. It's because Val Venus' second theme was done by, I believe, a group called Dance Party, a remix by Dance Party. And obviously WWE don't want to pay the fees to Dance Party, so let's just whack a generic track over the top of it. It'll all be fine.
I didn't realise that. On my copy, sorry to interrupt you. My copy, I have to go back and compare the themes then, because maybe just it was that unspectacular theme that I didn't notice.
If you can listen to the Dance Party remix, the official one, and what they dubbed over the top, there isn't much difference between them.
Oh, fair enough then. Yeah, Thank you, Tom, for clarifying that.
I also put the bell makes a satisfying ding on impact.
And I don't know if that's piped in or not.
It must be. Unless you ring the bell as you hit. Unless you hit the guy as you ring the bell.
I thought that's what they... You know what? Honestly, I realise how silly I sound by saying that. But I genuinely thought the bell would make that noise when they would ding.
I mean, it might do.
I mean, Samoan's heads are hollow, so it would make sense if that hit a bell.
Also, I put here, Val Venus, when celebrating his destruction, looks like Julian Barrett from the Mighty Boosh. There's a particular face that he has where he looks like Julian Barrett from Mighty Boosh. He looks like Howard Moon. Very Howard-y.
Thank you for that, Tom.
It's all right, mate. But I know, I loved it. I loved the rip-apart brawl that these guys had. They will take it to the next level in a few months' time.
They certainly would. On Raw, Benoit defeated Road Dogg to qualify for King of the Ring, and Hardcore Holly likewise did the same with Farouk after a beautiful Falcon Arrow. And on Sunday Night Heat, D-Von Dudley takes on Albert, and Bubba takes on Boss Man. Be still, my beating heart.
Do you not think there is a bit of a disparity? Because this is the story here with this particular King of the Ring. And for the record, I bloody love a King of the Ring. This is the biggest King of the Ring they've ever done. 32 competitors in this King of the Ring. Normally they're around 16 or 8. This is 32 in this one. And there seems to be a weird disparity as we get to the end. As some of the stars in this tournament, it's a mixed bag. And a lot of them crash out quite early. You know, you don't see... Eddie Guerrero does relatively well. He gets to the quarterfinals, so he stands out. Who else doesn't quite make it through?
All of the Meltzer favourites, whatever the term would be, all the work rate guys crash out in the quarterfinals yesterday, which I remember annoying a lot of people because, we want the Super J Cup, but you know what? It's been such a long time since I've seen King of the Ring 2000. I'm looking forward to it because after watching all this build-up, I'm like, come on, maybe this time we watch it, Crash Holly, we'll get to the finals.
They do tell a fun story with Crash Holly, but I don't think, if memory serves, I don't think it got over as they hoped it would. Like, I think they wanted, like, this groundswell of support for Crash Holly, but I might be mistaken. It's been a while since I've watched the King of the Ring pay-per-view, but I don't recall there being this mass crowd support, this groundswell for Crash Holly. And, you know, when you think about, like, the quarterfinals of this epic King of the Ring, one of the matches of the quarterfinals is Crash Holly versus Bull Buchanan. It shows a real, like, what's gone on here? Well, why are so many good ones gone so soon?
Well, I think King of the Ring 2000... At this point, like most King of the Rings, well, actually, not like most King of the Rings, actually, it goes on and off, doesn't it? But they're trying to get the full mid card a push. I mean, yeah, there's the Booby Cannons, the Crash Hollies, there's all these other little storylines going on right now, and I think they try to get all of them at once. And as a result, you know, not that many people got over. But it did show what the mid card was like around that period. But I think we'll have plenty to talk about in the upcoming weeks. Right now, we still don't know what's going to happen between Bubba Dudley and Big Boss Man, Tom. I think you're jumping the gun.
Oh, I'm very excited.
That's right. On the Sunday Night Heat podcast, that's right, Matthew and Sam Driver talk about all the action and excitement of Sunday Night Heat, the Euro 2000.
I'd listen to that.
Then me and Owen will watch Jacked every Saturday morning, 9 a.m. Be there or be stupid.
Can you and Andrew watch Livewire?
I think it's the only thing that's left.
Yeah.
Everything
whilst Andrew,
but Raw.
Whilst Andrew moisturises his head. I think we're going to have to get Andrew on a SmackDown podcast.
Oh, like, he's such a cool guy.
He's flipping nice.
Like, the editors in this wonderful world of Cultaholic, I think that they're the underdogs. And, you know, I meet with them, I talk crap, and they're just the loveliest people. It would be nice to see. But then I get worried because then I go, wait, Matthew, aren't you, like, doing a Kevin Sullivan here and booking your own divorce? Because what happens if we get Andrew on? And not only does he know more about wrestling than you, Matthew, but he does a better Kane impression than you.
I would never marry Andrew over you.
I might.
There is that.
But anyway,
I hear your concern, but I think we should get him.
I mean, I'm like, ha ha ha. Then he's actually, oh no.
I think we'll get Andrew on a future one.
Speaking of Sullivan, Chris Benoit talks backstage and says he does what he wants to do. Well, he must not want to emote then. And it's followed by the Go Midas CTE of the week, which is Kane pinning the Rock on Raw. Very confusing episode of this, which, like Tom said earlier, could have done with a recap, because then Kane pinned Rock and then Triple H pinned Rock and... Go Midas!
Go Midas!
go Midas, yeah. Andrew could do the King of the Ring watch-along, couldn't he?
Ooh.
We need somebody after the high highs of Matt McMuscles.
That's an idea. I'll drop him a message. If you would like. So Andrew is our editor on a Monday night. He does the Twitch stream. He plays spooky games. If you would like Andrew to be a part of the King of the Ring watch along, then feel free to drop a message to Matthew Gregg on Twitter saying, give me Andrew now. Those are the words you need to use. That's the secret code.
And doing so will unlock the hidden achievement of a random test picture.
Yes, it will, you lucky devils.
The first people to send me that, by the way, don't be put off by it. It takes me an hour or so to go, what the hell is... What? Andrew? Oh, SmackDown, right.
Yeah, it'll take him a second just to pop, for the gears to turn.
Right, they are very much the morning after the night before. What night? Well, the main event night. Kane, Undertaker, The Rock taking on DX. Kane shows up first, all by himself, to take on everyone, with Undertaker and his song by the Denver Broncos from the new hit album, The Denver Broncos. And this slowly brings out The Rock for the staggered entrance and pop. Wow, an order of importance there. I wonder who's going to be selling during this six-man tag. Undertaker annihilates Road Dogg. Kane tags in and sells for 3 seconds before taking out DX. Then Rock blind tags in and obliterates everyone with spine busters. Triple H pulls the rope down, so The Rock flies outside. And Road Dogg works over The Rock, and he sells for 30 seconds, which may be a new SmackDown record. Then Triple H tags in, and Rock makes his comeback. But then X-Pac takes him out and stays on offense. Good God, this is history. The Rock sells for X-Pac for a few minutes. That's right, this is the episode. That's going to be the header to get people's attention. And Rock makes a hot tag to Undertaker, and you've done it now. Kane comes in too, and together they salt the earth. Undertaker pins X-Pac, it all breaks down, then he just pins him with a chokeslam, and that's it. Nice, simple, hot match. Oh, whoa, wait, no. Undertaker gets triple teamed afterwards by DX, with Kane and Rock making the save. Oh, that's nice, there's no issues here. They will not be playing Triple H's game, if you will, about fighting amongst each other. Then Rock gets the chair off an interfering Shane McMahon and goes to twat him, but accidentally hits Kane. And I was almost swooning my eyes going, oh, wow, everybody's accidentally hitting everybody here. What are the chances of that? But then The Rock looks mad and then just flat out hits Undertaker without any intention of hitting anyone else. And I was very glad they did that, because if it had gone off the air with him accidentally hitting Kane, it's going to make the crappiest video package ever on Raw. Where everybody going against Triple H, no one can hit anybody they want to hit with a chair. It would have been bloody stupid. But The Rock going, nah, nuts to it, and just hits and take over a chair. It's like, oh, okay, good. So DX lost the battle, but the war is far from over, as they say in the Saturday morning cartoons, with Triple H's plan very slowly taking place. And any thoughts here on this little main event, Tom?
It's very much a holding pattern for Raw, this main event. You get quite a few of these, don't you? This is just kind of keeping everything ticking over, keeping all the plates spinning, not making any real... I mean, last week we had, like, King of the Ring almost set up, by the looks of things, on SmackDown. But then this show happened. Oh, then Raw happened, and everyone got wiped out. And now this is, once again, like a holding pattern for once we get back to Monday Night Raw, where they will... They'll no doubt decide the King of the Ring main event then. But it was fine as a main event. It was your standard Commonwealth Garden smash and grab car crash main event. Everyone hits big specials. Everyone goes home happy. The Rock doesn't like anyone. Battered Taker with a chair.
Yeah, and then after SmackDown off the air, he got on the microphone and goes... If you smell box office revenue, go see The Mummy Returns.
And that is how we end SmackDown.
Yes. Goodbye, Buffalo. There will be no encore. Mummy Returns. Mummy Returns. So, Tom, it's the end of the episode. What was something that you remembered from this week?
It was Rikishi and Val. I very distinctly remember these two just ripping each other to shreds in that tag match, in that singles match, and Rikishi jumping off the stage. I remember being really quite a cool moment. How about you, sir? What did you remember?
I remember The Rock getting fed up and hitting Undertaker with a chair.
Sod it. Bang.
Yeah, you know what? We've won the match. Bonk. I remember that. But what was something that you forgot?
I forgot about the Battle Royal. I forgot about the Women's Battle Royal and the jiggery pokery with Steph at the end of that, where Steph just wanders in and gets the win. Forgot all that happened. Like, that was good. That was a fun little bit of heel shenanigans that I was a great fan of.
Good times. That is what they say in the business, heel shenanigans.
And what did you forget?
I forgot all about the Rikishi Val Venus segment. I think it's easily the thing that stands out the most of this episode, because it's absolutely crazy. It's nice that they're still pushing Venus. He's been repackaged. He's come back. He did that promo. He was like, I'm back. And I was like, all right, whatever. But they haven't given up on it. They haven't gone, oh, you know what, Venus, no one cares about you, about your dick puns. They've gone, all right, well, let's give you Trish. Let's have you bloody up Rikishi, and then let's have Rikishi splash. They are like, no, we are keeping you afloat. The SS Val Venus is making it to port. That's
they
nice
still,
to see.
They still see him as a guy who could be a thing, despite the fact that, like, the feud he had with Rock and Mankind didn't set the world on fire. There's still a lot of hope that Val Venus can get some value for money out of Val Venus.
Yeah, like I said, the spinning plate are making sure all the mid-card is at least solid, because who knows, if Rock leaving, I mean, that means anybody could leave him. Bull Buchanan could be heading up his own thing. Hardcore Holly did a film with Ron Perlman last year. I mean,
that
really
was crazy.
Test could be on Games Master. He could be playing against Dave Perry.
Can I phone a friend? No, we don't do that on
you haven't got any.
Oh, I just need to phone Steph.
The Good Samaritans told you to stop ringing.
Steph knows how to use the warp whistle, and I can't remember.
All right. All right, Test. You've got to beat Dave Perry, Games Animal, at Super Mario 64.
Hey, we can dream. We can dream.
We can dream. We spend a lot of this podcast dreaming out loud, I think. But Tom, we have talked crap a lot of the time, but we have definitely talked. Other than your fabulous special with Ross, that's it, the Cultaholic Channel this week. Is there anything else you'd like to say? Oh, and Kevin Kelly, of course.
Kevin Kelly coming up tomorrow on Desert Island Graps. That's exciting. A brand new episode of the SmackDown review on Saturday. That's happening too. Justin, Henri and I. Not SmackDown, the Raw review. That's the one.
I
do something like that. That's coming up with Justin, Henri on Monday. The Cultaholic Classic Raw review. Justin and I are watching every episode of Monday Night Raw. You'll get that on Saturday as well. Otherwise, this week, news videos, NXT graded, all the other stuff. Ross is back on the channel. That there is where the excitement lies. Love you by Friday. Twitch.tv/Cultaholic on Friday afternoon from 2. Taking your live calls from the isolation station. What could possibly go wrong? How about yourself, Matthew? What's happening with you this week?
Well, other than getting ready to enjoy, break up the monotony of crap Kane impressions to crap Dave Meltzer impressions from Justin Henry.
We know our clientele on both brands, I tell you what.
Absolutely good. Cleanse the palate.
Yes.
I have a new Botchamania out. Yay.
Yay.
Google it. Botchamania 421 with the tasteful Rob Van Dam intro, which would have made more sense to be in Botchamania 420. But A, he didn't deliver it in time. And B, I think it's funnier him doing the one that isn't Botchamania 420. Just saying. It's the drug number. Apart from that, the Cultaholic podcast with myself, Jack, and yes, Mr. Ross, he's back again. We'll be hitting Friday evening time.
Yeah, Friday evening on the YouTube channel and on the podcast feed as well.
That's right. It depends on how much audio sweetening Mr. Dick Tubman has to do for ourselves. And I will also be doing my Twitch on Saturday afternoon. Well, 6 p.m. I don't know if that counts as afternoon for people. I don't know what I'll be playing. I actually managed to beat Hades yesterday for the first time.
Nice.
The game tells me there's been 50 hours put into it. There must be a glitch. That can't be right. went by very quickly. But I am going to try and make, touch wood, now I've said this on the podcast, the Sonic Randomizer that I've seen on Twitter that has now been fully released, getting to work. Ooh. Where every time you collect the ring, it goes to a different Sonic game.
Yeah, I've heard about this. It's something on my list of things to play. I definitely want to try the Sonic Randomizer. We might get that on Saturday.
Fingers crossed.
Oh, we'll find out Saturday. Until then, he is at Matthew Gregg on Twitter. I am at Tom Campbell on Twitter. We are at Cultaholic on Twitter. Don't forget to join us.
Thing is, Kenny, when I see you next, lads, I'm gonna, you know that weird tanning salon that's next to the cafe? Up from that is a casino. And round the back of that is Trillions. And I'm gonna go in Trillions. Buy a pint and drink it in your honour. Then I'm gonna put my boot up your ass. Love you, bye. Love you, bye.
Wonderful.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.